On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The oohs and ahs were loud and strong in San Francisco yesterday as Apple icon Steve Jobs rolled out his company's latest cool tool, the Apple iPhone.
What we want to do is make a leapfrog product that is way smarter than any mobile device has ever been and super easy to use. This is what iPhone is. Okay?
After rocking the world of computing with the Mac and of music with the iPod, here was Apple's sleek new must-touch grand entry into the realm of the cell phone. And not just a cell phone, Jobs assured the faithful with his trademark black turtleneck charisma, but Apple's one-of-a-kind synthesis of communications, computing, music, and video. The crowd cheered. The world may change. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, there's an Apple problem with ethics and stock options. Up next on Point, Apple, the iPhone, and the future of Steve Jobs and his fabled company. Joining me from New York is Lev Grossman, technology writer for Time magazine. He had a private viewing of the iPhone with Steve Jobs before yesterday's razzle-dazzle announcement and writes about it in the upcoming issue of Time. And he was in San Francisco yesterday for Jobs' public iPhone unveiling. Lev Grossman, thanks a lot. I think you took the red eye. We appreciate you sticking with us. Thanks for being here.
It was a late night, but I'm happy to be here.
Back in New York first, put us there yesterday in San Francisco in that hall, the old Jobs magic, the Apple magic. Was it there?
It was in full effect. When he gives those keynote speeches, he's preaching to the choir. I mean, the hall is packed with about 4,000 people who tend to be Mac zealots. However, one thing that's worth noting is even they were surprised. I kept a close eye on all the speculation and all the rumors out there, all the, the Photoshopped concept ideas people had about what Jobs was unveiled. Even the zealots were surprised. He surpassed even their expectations.
So, and by the way, for listeners who want to see this new thing, which is not on the market yet and won't be until the summer, but it's unveiled fully. There's a multimedia demonstration at our website, onpointradio.org. You can hear Steve Jobs' keynote address there as well. Lev, you saw it, what he displayed yesterday. You also sat with Steve Jobs in a private viewing of this thing. Describe it to us. What's the big deal about a new cell phone?
Well, I sat with Jobs, and he walked me through it. My one real cavil about this product is that phone is not really the right name for it. I mean, it is, first of all, an incredibly beautiful and re-engineered iPod. It's flat. The video is amazing in letterbox format. The animations, the interface, it's so easy to use. And packed into that same device, without making it bulky, in fact, it's quite beautiful and compact, is a fully functional cell phone that's better than any cell phone I've ever seen. And put on top of that, you can browse the web with it freely and not, in the sort of crippled way that a lot of cell phones allow you to. You see the full browser. You're looking at Safari, which is Apple's browser.
Yeah.
Full email. It's pretty astonishing.
Well, Lev, we'd better step back and kind of describe this thing for people who haven't even glimpsed it yet. Compare it, if you would, just very simple, from the ground up. Compare it to an ordinary cell phone. Compare it to a BlackBerry, to an iPod. What is this thing? What's it look like? What are its capacities?
Sure, it's about the size and shape of a bar of expensive chocolate. It's very thin and flat. There is most of the front of the device is taken up with one enormous screen.
No buttons on the front that I can see.
There is one button on the front.
Okay, one.
That is it. What you see is basically it looks a little bit like an iPod, but the whole front is a screen and it's a touch screen. So what happens is the way you work it is that when you want it to be a phone, it'll bring up a little keypad. When you want to see your email, it'll display email and a little sort of a little QWERTY keyboard.
A full keyboard, not the old punching again and again business to print things out, like a real keyboard on here.
Yeah, well, about the dimensions that you would see on a BlackBerry or
okay.
something like
yep.
that. So those little bitty keys, but it's
right.
quite usable.
Right.
I think that's the real insight there. They've developed a really unusual touchscreen technology that allows them to use the whole front face of the phone as a screen when you need a screen or as buttons when you need buttons. It's very fluid, and it's really a step forward.
So it's a cell phone. It's also access to the internet, and it shows full web pages here. It's got an internet browser there. It's it's tied in with Mac OS X software. It's a camera as well. Does it play video?
It does. It plays video actually quite beautifully. You may have seen the video iPod as it exists now. This is a much larger screen. It's also enormously crisp. I think 163 DPI, which is just it's much crisper than you'd see, for example, on the monitor on your desktop. So it's quite viewable.
All that for a lot of money, $499, nearly $500 for one model, and $700 for the other.
$600 for the other.
$600, okay.
It is quite expensive. I believe that that is with a commitment to a two-year contract with Singular as well. So it runs the risk, I think, of being marginalized a little bit as a luxury item. On the other hand, when you compare it price-wise to some of the smartphones that are out there, some of the high-end iPods that are out there, it's comparable in price, and it does deliver a lot more functionality.
Lev, where is this pointing us? I'm sure we're going to hear people thinking, you know, come on, there are so many kinds of cell phones out there. BlackBerry's been around for a long time. I've got little screens that show all kinds of still photos and video. That's not new. How do you describe or convey what's the big deal here?
Well, that's really the challenge, actually, because in some ways, Jobs isn't introducing a lot of new things people haven't seen before. People know about voicemail. People know about email on their phones. I think what you get when you see it, when you handle it, is that it's actually enormously useful. We're used to cell phones being quite frustrating in a way and difficult to use compared to, for example, a desktop computer. I would say this is as easy as checking your email on a desktop computer, as easy as surfing the web on a computer. It's that kind of ease and convenience when you're walking around or when you're, on a train or on a bus. And I think that will be enormously compelling once people actually get a sense of what he's delivering.
And with that ease of use, a kind of all-in-one tool in your hand, everywhere, all the time, if you've got it, but announced at a time when Steve Jobs is under a cloud, maybe not internally, but certainly externally, people still looking on the stock options backdating. You sat with him not long ago when he introduced this to you. Does he reference that problem, that scandal in the background?
He does not, and I asked him about it directly, and he declined to discuss it on the record, which isn't surprising to me. Jobs likes to keep a tight rein, I think, on his public image, and he considers this to be a matter that, obviously it's going forward. There is a potential shareholder lawsuit, also potential federal investigation. He has nothing really to gain by addressing this. Apple put out a statement, and I think he's going to let it rest at that for now.
Put us in the room where you're sitting, Lev Grossman and Steve Jobs, and as you describe it, under a black, a little towel on the tabletop as the new product. What's his vibe? What's he like? And where do you think he sees himself leading American technology, culture, his company now?
Well, Jobs is 50. It's an interesting year for him. Apple is going to be 30 years old this year. Jobs is he's a real force of nature. He is incredibly smart, and you get an almost sort of relentless sense from him. He's very much on message all the time. When he talks about his products, he believes in them utterly, and he tries to project that belief upon you. He's very, very quick in person, and he's quite funny as well. But there is this sense that he's very intense, and it's he kind of radiates this energy when you're with him that's kind of unlike anybody else I've ever met.
100 million iPods sold now, 1 billion tunes downloaded from iTunes, Apple's big step into digital downloaded music. Where does Jobs think this product takes the company? Are they now going head-to-head with cell phone makers worldwide?
Well, one thing he did that was symbolic yesterday was to delete the word computer from the name of the company. It's no longer Apple Computer. It's just Apple. I think he thinks of Apple as becoming a company like Sony in a way, with a full range of a full range of consumer electronics. One thing that Apple has that very few other companies have, probably none, is that they're very good at software and very good at hardware and very good at integrating the two. Most companies tend to make hardware or software. Apple does them both, and you really can't underestimate how important that is when you're making software for hardware that you also designed yourself, the level of integration he's able to achieve. That's why this iPhone looks like an artifact from the future. It looks like several years ahead of what anybody else has got.
So here we've got another Apple-made moment, technical, cultural, ethical, and we'll look at that. Also news yesterday that Apple may be cozying back up to the Beatles. Of course, the Apple was the Beatles company and symbol as well. The Beatles haven't sold their music online. Steve Jobs using images from Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band cover and lovely Rita. Here's a bit from his keynote address yesterday.
It works like magic. You don't need a stylus. It's far more accurate than any touch display that's ever been shipped. It ignores unintended touches. It's super smart. You can do multi-finger gestures on it. And boy, have we patented it.
So, talking about technology and culture right behind it yesterday in San Francisco, we've got Lev Grossman with us from Time Magazine. He was there. He spoke privately with Steve Jobs recently about the new product. We're going to turn to the business background here in just a moment, but Lev, just another minute on the product itself. Give us a couple of more details that illustrate what's different about this. The way it moves the camera framing as you move the machine, the way it responds to, what did he call it, multi-finger gestures, what?
Let me focus on the multi-finger gestures for a little bit, because this is the key technology, I think, that other companies will not be able to duplicate. We're used when dealing with touch screens or trackpads. They can be pretty frustrating when you're dealing with an ATM or the trackpad on your laptop. What they've got is something much smarter. Usually, for example, with a trackpad, when you put two fingers on it, it goes nuts. It has no idea where to put the cursor.
Mm-hmm.
Here, if you put two fingers on the screen and you've got maybe an image on there or a movie,
photograph,
actually, you can pinch your fingers together and the photo will get smaller. You can drag your two fingers further apart, and the image will get bigger. You have this illusion that you're almost actually physically manipulating data with your fingers. So it's almost as if you're just reaching to the cell phone and moving this photograph around and changing its shape. That kind of interface design and that kind of hardware technology, nobody else can do that. That's just something that makes Apple special.
The iPhone coming on there yesterday, they're hooked up with Singular for the phone service that comes with it. It doesn't come out until the summer. Why are they unveiling it so far in advance of it being available?
It's purely an FCC thing. When you make a cell phone, you need to get approval from the FCC. That takes a couple of months. Like I said, Jobs likes to be in control of his public message. He didn't want the information to leak out through the FCC. When this thing went public, he wanted to bring it out himself. It is disappointing. We'll have to wait 6 months for this thing to come out. But he made the right call. This was the way to put it out there.
Now, at the same time, we've got a whole lot of business interest here. Apple's stock been going up and down lately on the investigation into stock backdating, their options backdating. I want to begin to turn, for a business perspective, to Henry Chesbrough. He's executive director at the Center for Open Innovation at University of Berkeley, California, Berkeley, Haas School of Business. His new book is Open Business Models, How to Thrive in the New Innovation Landscape, in which he writes about Apple. Henry Chesbrough, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So here's the man, Steve Jobs, that Lev Grossman describes as a sort of a cross between Willy Wonka and Harry Potter, rolled into one, he says, doing his thing again yesterday. Behind it, the stock options backdating scandal, if you will. How do you see Apple positioned right now? New product, Steve Jobs at the helm, up 1,000% its stock since he came back. This cloud behind, how do you see the company overall, Henry?
I think Lev has done a great job of describing for your listeners some of the things that make the iPhone so neat, and I think they really also bear on the answer to your question, Tom. Apple, I think, uniquely puts the user and the user experience at the center of all the technology it develops. They do the hardware, they do the software, as Lev was saying, and it's all done with a view to making things that will delight and amaze consumers. And I think this latest announcement just furthers their track record in that area and makes Apple even more unique yet again.
Now, first, as a business matter, can they dive into the pool with all the cell phone makers with their, you know, Apple design and Apple interactivity with the machine and come out a winner? That's a kind of a low-margin business. Apple's asking a high price. What do you foresee?
You're exactly right. The cell phone business is a massive business, a truly global business in both volume and geographic distribution in terms of where the suppliers are located all around the world. My sense is that with the iPhone at the prices that they announced yesterday, they're really sticking their toe in the water rather than jumping in with both feet. I think the people that are really need to be worried are the people that make the Trios and the Blackberries, the high-end multifunction devices that, yes, do have a phone, but are really purchased to do other functions as well. That, I think, is where the iPhone is going to have its biggest impact in the foreseeable future. It's going to be a long time before you see iPhones at $50. But if you look at the iPod, I think you'll get a sense of where Apple will be going, because remember, the first iPods also came out at high prices, and they were really kind of narrowly targeted. Now, between the Nanos and the Minis and the Videos and all the rest, they've got an iPod for every purse and every purpose.
And what about the cultural side of this, Henry Chesbrough? It's easy, maybe, to hear this and think, well, here's just another phone. And yet we've seen how technology has really changed the culture, the way we interact with one another and with performance, let's say, over many years. Steve Jobs talking about this pulling together communications and video and music and computing. How do you see the likely cultural imprint of the direction this product and thereby American technology is leaning in?
You're right, Tom. In the short term, this is a high-end multifunction device that's very expensive. In the longer term, this could be a major cultural moment, much like the iPod has turned out to be. I would look also to another announcement they made yesterday of Apple iTV, where they're really trying to take on the TV and entertainment in the living room as well. And I think if you look at the overall portfolio of the technologies they're working on, and you start to think of how they could begin to mix and match and integrate these together, all from the viewpoint of delivering a superior user experience, it's very exciting to think about what they might be able to achieve in a few years.
Lev Grossman, what's your sense of where the culture may go once hitched up to a product like this?
Well, it's interesting. This is the iPhone. It's different from the iPod in some ways. It's not the iPod created a new market that didn't exist before. Mm-hmm. Digital music players. They were, you know, sort of a geek accessory, and they became mainstream. Here, Jobs is diving into a market that exists already. The phone market, and more specifically the smartphone market. He's not going to change the entertainment industry this time around. He's not going to create a new market. I actually would tend to downplay the social and cultural impact of the iPhone. He's trying to break off a small piece of a really enormous market, and I think he'll do that very successfully.
Let's take a call from Alexandria, Virginia. Harriet's on the line. Hi, Harriet. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling to say that so far I've always stuck to kind of low-end cell phones and not spent a lot on that kind of technology.
Yeah.
I've recently been wanting an iPod, but I haven't yet invested. I thought I'd probably go ahead and get a cheap iPod. But with this coming out in the summer, I think this might be the time to leap to high-end technology and go ahead and spring for it, even if it's more expensive, because it's the all-in-one device.
Are you prepared to have a $500 cell phone in your pocket or your purse, Harriet? Would that make you a little bit nervous, you know, flinging it around at the supermarket?
But it won't be just a cell phone. I don't have an iPod yet.
Right. So
it'll also be an iPod.
So all-in-one, Henry Chesbrough, do you think Harriet's sort of an indicative American consumer here?
Well, I think that Harriet is somebody they had in mind when Steve Jobs demonstrated the feature of when you take a call on your iPhone, the music automatically turns down. And then when you end the call, the music automatically resumes so that Harriet could indeed enjoy her music on an ongoing basis, take the calls or make the calls that she needs to make, and then get right back to her music again.
I feel this cultural piece, Lev, in spite of what you say there, the kind of easy teleconferencing, you're talking on the phone, somebody else calls, Bing, 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 you touch the screen. There in the call, it's a three-way, the music right behind. It seems to me to be wrapping those sort of media fingers tighter and tighter, and the media web of life tighter and tighter, or more and more intimately around us.
Well, it sounds a little sinister when you talk about fingers. It is. I mean, it certainly puts you in this cocoon. They're shipping it with a pair of headphones, which are also a cell phone headset. So you're listening to your music in your headphones. You don't even take off the headphones. You just click a little clicker on there, and it becomes your cell phone headset. It's very sweet. And I think there'll be a lot of Harriets out there. I'm one of them. I think I may even switch cell phone providers to Singular in order for me to be able to use this phone. I think it's that much of a differentiator.
Music to Apple's ears, I'm sure. Ebony is calling from Bowie, Maryland. Hi, Ebony, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm wondering, what does it say about society when a piece of technology commands a rock band-like following? Like, isn't this the epitome of alienation and commodification of labor? The iPod, the iPhone, and the results of all these creative people and the labor of countless humans, but all we see is Steve Jobs and this new phone, and I really don't know how to feel about that.
Well, let's look at that. I mean, people no doubt got excited about fire, about the wheel. I'm not putting this on that scale, but humans are excited about the way they interact with the material world, aren't they?
Yeah, we are.
Is that a bad thing, a weird thing, necessarily an imposition on labor?
No, I'm just saying that it shouldn't be ignored, the large amount of people that went into creating this one piece of technology, or this interdisciplinary piece of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Ebony, thanks for that. Lev Grossman, what about the team behind this and the sort of platform of effort that it sits on?
Well, this is where a lot of, budding design talent goes now. This is where a lot of creative effort goes in creating these kind of technology fetish objects. And I agree, it's something, when we invent a tool, we create a tool, but the tool also changes us. And I think it's certainly something to keep an eye on. I often worry now, I wear my iPod a lot. I worry now that I'm sort of losing the talent of being by myself and not being entertained, taking a long walk and not having music to listen to, being alone with my own thoughts. I kind of worry that that's a sort of a skill or a muscle that's going a little bit slack now. So there are things, I think, and trends to watch about this that are, not entirely positive.
Losing the music of the spheres when you've got the music of the earbuds always plugged in there. I want to look at the sort of thicker plot that sits behind the hoopla yesterday. This backdating of stock options is an issue that hasn't gone away and may not. I want to turn for a moment to Tel Aviv and Lucian Bebchuk. He's director of the program on corporate governance at Harvard Law School. He's a professor of law, economics, and finance there. He's co-author of Pay Without Performance. He wrote an op-ed in Saturday's Wall Street Journal titled Inside Jobs, about Steve Jobs and Apple and stock options. Lucian Bebchuk, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Remind us of the issue here. What happened with the backdating of stock options? This is something that a couple of hundred American companies have now been fingered for. It happened at Apple as well. There's some big money involved. What's the scandal?
Let me say first, Tom, that it's a difficult position in this celebration of iPhone to be the party pooper. But that's what I was asked to do. So we have now about 200 companies that have come under scrutiny for improperly dating stock option awards. And there is actually evidence in a paper that Krausers and I did that there are hundreds and hundreds of additional companies.
Lucian Bebchuk, if you could stand by for a moment, we're going to try and get a better line here. Yours is breaking up pretty badly there from Tel Aviv, but we'll try and come right back to it. Henry Chesbro, would you be good enough to lay out for us the elements of the stock option backdating at Apple?
Yes, I'm not an expert in this, but my understanding is that over a series of months and even years, Apple has given stock options not only to Steve Jobs, but to many of its employees which, as your previous caller points out, the achievements like the iPod or the iPhone are the function result of many, many people's work. And indeed, stock options are a key means to attract these people to companies like Apple and then to try to keep them there once they arrive. But what backdating did was essentially cheat the stockholders when those prices were issued. Instead of giving employees the incentive to drive things up further and make more money, the backdating allowed them to get the absolute lowest price possible during that period of time. And whoever issued that, the stockholders that issued that stock essentially didn't get fair value for what they issued in turn.
The dynamic here that the stock option is like a chit you can trade in. The lower the price it's issued to you at, the greater spread you're likely to have when you ultimately send it. Ben Stein in the New York Times on Sunday said backdating is like getting to pick lottery numbers after the winning numbers are drawn, and it's apparent that Steve Jobs, we're told from their internal investigation that Al Gore was involved in. Steve Jobs knew about it. Al Gore and the rest of that crew said he didn't profit from it, but he got $75 million worth of restricted stock that he paid for it. Ben Stein saying, you know, this is just ethically off the reservation. Henry Chesbrough, do you see it that way? It's unacceptable, even though it had become quite a widespread practice in Silicon Valley.
Yes, there's no ethical justification for backdating. At a minimum, it's unethical, and indeed it may be illegal. And I think remedies need to be pursued, depending, particularly if it's illegal. But the other side of this coin, of course, is that Steve Jobs is in a big battle for competition to attract those very talented designers, engineers, software developers, marketers, etc. It's a very tough battle out there, and that's why I think he was doing this. He wasn't doing it to make money for himself. He was doing this as part of this competition, and this is part therefore of a much larger problem. And so we shouldn't focus only on Apple. We need to clean this up more generally, so that shareholders are getting a fair deal, and people then can really try to work hard to raise the value of their companies, which is really what we want stock options to do.
Henry Chesbrough is with us from Stanford, California. He's at Berkeley's Haas School of Business. We've been joined from New York by Lev Grossman. He's technology writer at Time Magazine, was in San Francisco yesterday for the iPhone unveiling. Lucian Bebchuk joins us now again from Tel Aviv. Lucian, if you could lay out for us the ethical problem with stock option backdating, and what do you say to Henry Chesbrough when he says we shouldn't focus so much on Apple on this? After all, they're hardly alone.
Starting with the last, we should indeed not single out Apple. By our estimates, about 12% of all firms are provided grants at the lowest price of the month, and not for luck alone. So there was a large incidence of manipulation, and we will have to look at it closely. But by the same token, while we shouldn't focus only on Apple, we shouldn't be especially forgiving with respect to Apple. We should just apply the same rules across the board.
Can Apple's cleared Steve Jobs internally, but that may not be the end of the story. There's still possibility of federal investigation here. There's a shareholder suit out there. Could Steve Jobs conceivably end up losing his job over this?
It's possible, Tom. What we know are the facts that Apple reported. And looking only at those, a lot of questions remain. And what the report does is doesn't provide someone from the outside with the ability to reach a conclusion that there wasn't a significant governance failure at the very top at Apple. For example, Apple, you know, reached a conclusion that more than 6,000 grants were improperly dated, but that no one currently in senior management position was responsible for it. The responsibility, according to the report, is fully placed on two former executives, the general counsel and the CFO, who have left the company. But the mystery that the reader faces is, what incentives do those two former executives have to engage in massive backdating without at least tacit support from other members of senior management. And in particular, why would they act to increase the compensation of a CEO who, according to Apple's report, was unaware that this was happening?
Professor Bebchuk, let me ask you, if I may, the bigger question here. Henry Chesbrough was talking about the overall value to shareholders of bringing in top talent and rewarding them well. If what we're talking about here, and this gets to the heart of the issue in many companies, I suppose, if what we're talking about is value to shareholders, and if Steve Jobs is very valuable to them, is it possible that he's worth more despite this taint than what the sort of moral rectitude of punishing him or tossing him out to shareholders? Is it better to keep him even if he played the system?
That might be the case from the perspective of shareholders, and that's what the market price reaction was suggesting, but that is not going to be the decisive consideration for the SEC and other law officials when they look at it, because for them the issue cannot be just resolved by the immediate interest of Apple shareholders. There is the more general social interest in having executives play by the rules. We cannot, for example, press charges against some executives, but not against others who did the same thing, based on who is a more successful executive and who is more valuable at a particular point in time for shareholders.
Henry Chesbrough, I know we've just got you for another minute. You're out there very near to Cupertino and Apple land. What's the buzz? Are people presuming that Steve Jobs will ride this out? His Apple stock was down earlier on fear that he might not. Does he seem secure in his position or not?
The buzz out here, Tom, is that this is likely, with the evidence produced so far, it's likely to blow over and not cost Jobs his position. And I think people out here are rooting for him to hang on, in part because of the vision that he brings to the industry with products like the ones we're discussing today.
Henry Chesbrough at Berkeley's Haas School of Business, it's been great having you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Let me take a call from Rockville, Maryland. Bruce is on the line. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Hey. I went over to the other side about 6 months ago to Macintosh land, and this new iPhone is just so far ahead of anything else that I'm dumping my current cell phone carrier. I mean, the real winner is going to be Apple, but singular too. It's just so far ahead of anything else.
Tell us, what's got you so swept up in it only 24 hours after it's out in public?
Well, just the ability of combining all three of those functions in one device, and that it's easy to use, and really, it's just cool. It's just Apple stuff works better. It's designed better, it's stylish, and it's the thing to have.
So you're ready to dump and run to Apple. Bruce, thanks for your call. Let's get another from Milford, Connecticut. Kathleen, you're on the line. Hi.
Hi. First of all, I just want to get off my chest is, why is it that no one can ever put out a press announcement about Apple without having to find something negative to pair with it? It's so strange that it just seems like all the time it's like, Apple's done this wonderful thing, but...
Well, I mean, it's not every day you've got this stock option backdating thing, something of that scale. It's hard to ignore it, I guess. But what do you think of the product, Kathleen?
Okay, yeah, the product itself, I think that the term that's been bouncing around the web is geekgasm. The nerds and geeks out there have just been overwhelmed with this thing. And
geekgasm, what is it? What's got you so keyed up over it?
Well, for one thing, it's... As has been mentioned earlier in the program, Apple somehow has had this ability to combine function and style in a way that I don't think any other company has been able to do. I mean, I've been a Mac user since about 1990, and I've always loved the functionality, the ease of use, the fact that they understand that people not so much want to have a tool to play with, but want to get something done.
So is it a toy, or will it change your life, the texture of life?
I'm one of the target users. I have a Trio, and I have a cell phone, and an iPod. And the thing is the Trio almost does so many things. it's almost a good web browser. It's and almost a good camera. It's almost, you know, list, you know, things like a music player or whatever. But it's small, it's clunky, it's like, you know, holding up a small brick to your ear when you need to talk. And one of the things that hasn't been mentioned so much is there's a proximity sensor in the iPhone. So when the thing gets close to your face, the screen shuts off. Right. You're not doing input with your with the side of your face when right. you're talking on the phone.
Right, right. So I mean, grooviness on many fronts there. Kathleen, thanks very much for that call. And off we go with the geekgasm. Let's take Gary from Boston. Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good. What do you know? What do you think, Gary?
I'm going to push this one step farther, which is usually the case with Apple. I think that the big dream here has always been to bring the Internet Protocol as a way of subsuming all media and bringing it in a portable wireless device. So that saying, IP all over, which is currently partially being done by satellite radio, for example, is going to bring television and radio and any possible other media, which is all digital now, into a streaming portable function, especially as bandwidth catches up around here, which, as you know, the United States is lagging far behind other countries. So
you see a new day dawning there, bringing Internet Protocol onto this device. And Gary, thanks for that. Lev Grossman, Steve Jobs describes a lot of the technology people have used in this arena or arenas as broken, and himself and Apple as fixing broken technology. You know, it makes you wonder if maybe we have lived in a world of really clunky technology. If it all got buffed up into proper shape, the whole sort of texture of how we interact with it would be truly a qualitative step different. Better life might be different in that degree anyway.
When I saw the iPhone, I think the emotion that I felt really was relief. I suddenly realized the phone that I have, my fingers are too big for the keys. I have to dial with the tip of my fingernail. It's always doing things that I don't expect, that I'm triggering things by accident. It has very these sort of really weird, sensitive touch screens. When I'm on a call and another call comes in, half the time I lose one or both of the calls. It is broken. Jobs is absolutely right. Cell phones, and I don't think we realized it, are an immature technology, and they've suddenly grown up, and they look like the iPhone.
Lucian Bebchuk, you said at the outset you hated to be the party pooper here. Where do you think this ends up with Steve Jobs on the kind of excitement around his products and the profits he's brought home staying in the saddle, or could this really turn into something that will boot him right out?
I think it's probably not going to matter to the law officials who look at this, because even before this, he was a man of great accomplishments. No question, a great business leader and visionary. That was before today's announcement. It might be even more after today's announcement.
You're saying law enforcement doesn't care? They may come after him anyway with criminal charges or just a kind of regulatory pinch?
I'm saying that law enforcement, this is not and should not be the decisive consideration. And what will happen will really depend on what facts are learned about what Jobs knew and appreciated at the time. And right now, we don't have enough to know and to decide.
Well, wonderment and the law on the same stage there. Lucian Bebchuk at the Harvard Law School joining us today from Tel Aviv. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Great being. Thanks a lot.
Lev Grossman, I don't think that's the combination Apple fans are really up for, but it's a little bit unavoidable here.
It is. I hope at least shareholders keep sight of the fact that the amount of money that the backdating that was done cost shareholders was minute compared to the kind of money that that Apple has earned for them. The company was 90 days away from bankruptcy when Apple returned 10 years ago this July. It's now up over 1,000%. Ethically, legally, I'm not an authority, but financially, keeping Jobs around is the right thing to do.
And off we go. Lots of dynamism there and always interesting questions in Apple land. Lev Grossman, thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Lev Grossman, technology writer for Time Magazine, just back on the red eye from San Francisco and California. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.